Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettay along with Charlie Long in studio on our Oakwood Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line from Baton Rouge Proud. She covers the LSU baseball, LSU basketball, LSU football. Can't put that all on a business card. Chessa Boucher, thank you, Chess, for joining us this afternoon.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Chessa, one of the things you got to say, I think all of us knew this year would look different from a year ago. And it's hard to replace talents like a Paul Skeens, Dylan Cruz. Charlie and I talked about it. You know, even people like Trey Morgan, Gavin Dugas, those type of people. It's difficult because not only you lose the talent, but you also lose a little bit of chemistry. And now it's ever changing now in college sports, that the chemistry wise, you got to build throughout the season. I thought Jay did a very, very good job this year. Kind of try to steady the wheel when you 3-12, you're struggling. You and I talked about it. We didn't even know if this team could make it to the SEC tournament. And then they get there, and then you thought it was going to be a short stay, so you just brought one bag with you instead of the two or three. So you had to find the laundry after. One of the things I think gets overlooked in this is when you're trying to recycle a team and retool it, it's a lot more difficult than what the average person out on the street thinks it is. Not only because of talent, but also because of the chemistry part.
Yeah, I think that was one of the biggest key pieces to this team and why they struggled in the first half of SEC play was because of the chemistry. What I saw from the team, a lot of the guys from last year's team, the national championship team, it was almost like a divide of the guys that won it and then the new guys that came in, and they didn't really mesh very well. And you could tell, like, even talking with Michael Braswell, he said there was kind of a different vibe heading into the season. And then when Jay kind of put the clamps down and he took away the phones and he's like, no, we're going to be a team. I think they really came together. And I'll be honest with you, Mike, I kind of hated on Tommy White there for a few weeks, so talking about how he didn't have a ton of leadership and he was more of a doer and just not a born leader. But in the back half, and especially in postseason, I saw Tommy kind of come into his own of taking charge of this team and being that front runner for this team. And I think that was a lot of the things that they missed. They just didn't have a true leader. You talked about a Trey Morgan. You talked about a Dylan Cruz, who was a silent leader, but he was a leader with his play on the field, and especially Paul Skeens, an absolute alpha male who those guys wanted to follow. And I think a lot of that, the problems in the front half of the SEC play, it all came down to chemistry and leadership, and I think he lacked two of those with this team. I think in the back half, you saw some of these true freshmen come in and take on roles that you might not have expected from younger guys, and they started learning how to win. Before, it was like they didn't know how to win, and then all of a sudden, they put a few wins together, and they were like, oh, this is how it goes. So it was such a tough loss last night to sit there and watch. I was actually telling my boyfriend of, like, the year before, we knew this team, we were watching a national championship team, and we knew they had it in them. But to see the turnaround of the underdog of being like, oh, hell yeah, we're about to, like, go on this run, you really fall in love with a team like that, of seeing them do the unthinkable. And so when it comes to essentially two outs in the SEC championship game against Tennessee, and then essentially two more outs against UNC, the number four team in the country, It hurts a little bit more. So today I might not be as hyped up as I normally am. It sucks. It sucks that it's over with.
Well, you're a former athlete, okay? You're a former college athlete. You understand the heartbreak of losing. It's like wide world of sports playback. But I think what you brought up, the freshmen, they the building blocks for next year for this team. What do you look at position-wise that they'll be looking at in the transfer portal? Because that is such a big part now, especially college basketball and now college baseball also. It plays a part in college football, but I think in baseball and basketball, it's a bigger piece of the puzzle.
Oh, it's huge, and I don't envy Jay Johnson. I will tell you that the teams that are in the super regionals and the teams that are going to Omaha better watch out, because Jay Johnson now has a lot more free time to go out there. And we know he is the portal king when it comes to getting recruits to come to LSU. Position-wise, I think it's hard to really figure out what you need just because of what you're losing. You have seven that are completely out of eligibility, so they're gone. Then you have four guys that are going to the draft with Holman, Jump, Tommy White, and Thatcher Hurd, I would assume all go to the draft. And then you have some other guys like Jared Jones, who's a draft-eligible sophomore. You have Griffin Herring, who's a draft-eligible sophomore. And then someone like Michael Braswell, who he improved drastically from last year at South Carolina, where he wasn't your everyday starter, and he was kind of used here and there, and then to become that everyday starter at shortstop. Does he return? It'll be interesting to see if he does come back, just simply because, I mean, that spot is a huge spot, and it's tricky at LSU when you are that guy at shortstop. There's a lot that comes with it because you've had so many phenomenal guys like Kramer Robertson, Alex Bregman. There's a lot of pressure on you. So does he return knowing the heat that he's going to face for another year at LSU to hopefully make a deeper run? But also with his eligibility, with him being a junior, he's not going to have a ton of leverage with the draft the next year as being a senior. So there's a lot of question marks. I know for sure, I think coming back, you'll have Cade Anderson, you'll have Milam Brown Larson, Josh Pearson, who will be a senior, and his brothers coming from West Monroe. So you have a lot of guys that are returning, but there's just so many question marks of who goes in the portal, who are you going to try to replace then? But I would leave it up to Jay Johnson to definitely go out and get some big names out of the portal, especially with some of the guys who have already put their name into the portal without even supers being here yet. So I'm interested to see how Jay comes back and kind of fills this roster in the hole. But you talked about it earlier, Mike, with last year, Tommy White was your only everyday starter from a national championship team. I think you've got a great foundation with the, especially these four freshmen that you use in big spots this year.
And then, Chessa, looking back at last night's game, we've gotten more questions about the decision to pull Ackenhausen for Jump in the ninth than, you know, the kind of comments that you saw last night on social media about Jake Brown's error in the 10th. And I want to get your thoughts on that decision from Jay Johnson, where Ackenhausen comes in. I don't want to say he necessarily emptied the tank, but he got those three strikeouts, you know, brings it to the ninth inning. They're still clinging on to that 3-2 lead. Do you think it was, Mike and I talked a little bit about this, do you think it was kind of pregame determined that had they had the lead entering the ninth inning, that they were going to go to Gage Jump, who had thrown 102 pitches on Friday?
Oh, absolutely. I think especially after using Griffin Herring, you don't really have that true closer to go to. I think that was the call probably before even game one of the regional, because that's how Jay Johnson, he coaches so far in advance and plans out everything, that I'm sure that was already in the works going into the weekend. It's hard to go back and forth between that call. Absolutely. You think, oh, Nate just struck out the side, why not put him back out there? But I kind of like the call from Jay. Obviously, I don't like the outcome, but when you're down to your final three outs, you want your guy on the bump, and that has been Gage Jump. He's been the absolute most consistent from start to finish. Why not hand him the ball? But the thing for me is, I understand where he's coming from, but it's a huge difference from starting a ball game and going five, six, seven innings deep like Gage has done throughout his season throughout the year this year for LSU, coming in a high leverage spot and trying to empty the tank. Then what I've seen from Gage, he kind of needs to settle in that first and second inning. And so to me, it's like, man, I understand you give him the ball, you want your ace, you want your guy to get the job done, but it's just such a huge spot. I would feel more comfortable going to Gage strictly because, again, that's your best pitcher that you've had all year. But Nate has been solid. He was solid for that inning, striking out the side. So why not go back to him? But again, hindsight 2020, I'm kind of like Jay. I'm more of the consistent, maybe unusual decision making, especially when the ball game comes down to, you know, this inning or maybe the next two innings. You want your guy on the mound. So I would have made the same call. Again, 50-50, you never know what's going to happen, but I think that was the best opportunity for your team to win.
You get paid a lot of money when you're a manager of a major team, but you got a lot of sleepless nights, Chessa. You got a lot, because you can second guess yourself over and over again, and you made, you know, you made the best call that you thought, you know, you're trying to win the game. Herm Edwards said it. We're trying to win the game at this point. When you look at it, other than an SEC team, I think Charlie and I talked about this. North Carolina seems to have all the ingredients to win a national championship. If it's not a Tennessee or an A&M, I think North Carolina, is there a better outfield than what they have? And those guys are great on defense.
Freaking absolute studs, the range too. I think North Carolina is going to be the team to beat, and I'm not going to hate on Tennessee, even though I'd love to hate on Tennessee because of Tony B and his antics. But if I put my money on any team, it would be in UNC. Just from top to bottom, they have the pitchers. To win in Omaha, you have to have that 1-2 punch. They have it. They have the closer. We saw that last night. And their bats, they really are – they take great at-bats. That's what I think was one of the more disappointing things of – I mean, Tommy White, his last at-bat in the purple and gold was horrendous. Like, the swings he took, his approach, everything was just like, this is not the Tommy White that we've gotten accustomed to seeing. And so, to me, it was just, I think UNC showed its dominance, and it also had arms to go to, and LSU didn't really have the arms to go to, which is the reason why he had to go to Gage Jump. So, yeah, I think UNC is the team to beat in Omaha for sure.
I think they're just complete, right, Chessa? Like, there's no other real word for UNC. They play great defense, and you saw that on display last night. They were excellent defensively, and that's part of the reason why
and
LSU...
And it's hard to beat the champ.
No, it is.
It's hard to beat the champ. I don't care if it's the same team. Man, it's hard. Man, that champ goes down, and it's difficult to knock them out.
Great defense. Yep. They got the star power offensively. Mike and I talked about it. They have one of the best outfields in college baseball. And then you saw their pitching rotation last night. Like, I mean, once again, their defense played a great game, but North Carolina's pitching, once they gave up the lead and they were down 3-2, they gave up one hit from the fourth inning to the 10th against the defending champs. So I agree with you 100%, Chessa. But if you're looking past UNC, I know you talked a little bit about Tennessee. I mean, who's your favorite now to win the 2024 College World Series?
I go back and forth between A&M and UNC. Mm-hmm. The reason why A&M, they have the arms. Last year, they didn't have the arms, but they had the bats. Now they have both this year. And Jim Schlossnagel is a hell of a coach. He knows how to win in the postseason. So I wouldn't want to bet against him. And it, like you said, with UNC, they just impressed me defensively on every level, in the infield, in the outfield. They just didn't make a ton of mistakes, and the one or two mistakes that they did, LSU capitalized on. But I think they'll definitely clean that up as they get into the super regional placement or playing against a West Virginia team who's never even made it to a super regional. So UNC being a blue blood program, they already had the leg up on that, but also just their arms. And like you said, nothing beats consistency. When you're consistent, it's hard to beat them. I would pick UNC to win it all this year.
Chessa, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. We really appreciate it. Look, I'm going to give you a little bit of time off, and then you're going to wake up one morning, and you're going to say, what? Fall practice is here already for LSU?
I know. I'm already going to be sweating my eyebrows off at fall camp. I can't wait.
Chessa, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Y'all have a good one.
All righty. Chessa Boucher, sports reporter for Baton Rouge Proud, covers all aspects of LSU sports.